matchup between Joe Biden and one of the major Republican candidates, there was no clear leader in most of the opinion polls, except for former South Carolina Governor Nikki Haley. When matched up against Joe Biden, Nikki Haley led 49% to 43%. No other Republican presidential candidate, including former Vice President Mike Pence, Senator Tim Scott of South Carolina, entrepreneur Vivek Ramaswamy, and former New Jersey Governor Chris Christie, Florida Governor Ron DeSantis, or former President Donald Trump, showed more than a 2 percentage point margin in the matchup with Biden. The opinion poll also found that 67% of Democratic and Democratic-leaning voters wished they had an alternative to Joe Biden. The two candidates running against him, author Marianne Williamson and Robert F. Kennedy Jr., both polled at 1%. Declining shares of the Democratic base see him as inspiring confidence, which stands at 51%, down 19 percentage points since last March. Declining numbers of Democrats also see him as having the stamina and the sharpness to serve effectively as president, which is now at 49%, down 14 percentage points since last March. Also, the survey found about 2 in 3 Democratic-aligned voters say they would like to see a different nominee than Joe Biden. 67% of Democratic and Democratic-leaning voters surveyed in the opinion poll said they would like their party to nominate someone other than Joe Biden, which is up from 54% who said the same back in March. Out of those who would like to see a different candidate, 82% said they would prefer any candidate besides the current president. 18% listed a specific alternative to Joe Biden, but just 1% respectively said they would support one of Biden's primary challengers. The opinion poll also found that Democratic support for seeing Biden as inspiring confidence has dropped 19 percentage points since last March and now stands at 51%. Declining numbers of Democratic-aligned voters also see him as having the stamina and sharpness to serve effectively as president, which is now at 49%, down 14 percentage points. The American newspaper The Hill has also covered the same story and tells us more. The Hill reports that most voters in a new opinion poll believes President Joe Biden was involved in his son's business dealings whilst he was vice president. The opinion poll released on Thursday, 7th of September, and conducted by SSRS, found that 61% of voters believe that Biden had some involvement in Hunter Biden's business dealings, including 42% saying he acted illegally, and 29% who said it was unethical but not illegal. Another 38% believe that President Biden did not have any involvement in Hunter Biden's businesses. The opinion poll also found that more than half of voters believe that President Biden acted inappropriately over the investigation into alleged gun and tax crimes committed by his son, whose plea deal with prosecutors fell apart back in July. The opinion poll was conducted before special counsel David Weiss revealed he will seek to indict Hunter Biden before the end of this month in a court filing updating the judge on his investigation into the president's son's failure to pay taxes. President Biden has denied any involvement in his son's business dealings as House Republicans barrel towards a possible impeachment inquiry into the president over issues relating to his family's business dealings. Views about whether President Biden was involved in his son's business are divided among partisan lines. Just 28% of Democrats said he had some involvement in his son's dealings, while 90% of Republicans said he had some involvement, including 76% who said this was illegal. Moreover, the U.S. deficit is projected to roughly double this year, largely due to higher interest rates and lower tax revenues. The Committee for a Responsible Federal Budget, an organization that pushes for lowering the deficit, is projecting the federal deficit will double this year to total about $2 trillion for the fiscal year that ends on 30th of September.
A diverse range of programs. Spirituality. Youth. Eastern Tales. Roundtable discussions. Culture. Politics. All produced by IRIB English Radio.
Start.
Movement.
Speed.
Live in hope.
Toward the peak.
On Youth Station.
Youth Station.
I am a Muslim.
I am a Muslim.
Islamidi.
Islamidi.
Allah my Lord.
Allah my Lord.
His word Quran.
His word Quran.
Muhammad Prophet.
Muhammad Prophet.
Praise be upon.
Praise be upon.
I am Muslim for all of time.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. In your name, we shall start all the stories. Yes, assalamu alaikum, dear listeners, my dear sisters and brothers from every nook and cranny of this huge world. Welcome back to a new episode of Youth Station. Well, I'm Asma, and here with me...
Assalamu alaikum, my name is Abu Zahra. Happy to be here.
Yeah. Well, we're again in the Youth Station, and I'm sure we're going to have an amazing session again. Because Youth Station is always amazing. What kind of a person you are? As for me, I would say I'm an overthinking person.
Yeah, what do you mean by that?
Tiny matters in this life might sound tiny to people. But then to me, they're not so tiny.
They're a big deal. Yeah. Isn't that the case for a lot of people, though?
Yeah, it's been so... So like this, so common for everyone.
Okay.
Every single person I see, they're mostly these kind of people who think, who overthink about every single trivial even issues.
Is it a problem? Isn't it a good thing to think about things?
No.
Don't take rash decisions,
right? It's not always a good thing to think too much about everything. Like I told you, there are some certain things that are trivial. They did not need to think too much about them, but some certain people like me, including me, would go through too much of thinking for those trivial things.
Why do you think that's the case? Firstly, I actually think that people don't think enough. But maybe we're so busy overthinking about the trivial matters that we don't think enough about the important matters. Because I meet youths quite often, and we discuss a lot of things, and I often find that people don't think about the important things of life. Even important decisions that they make, they don't think about them, right? So sometimes, you know, it's a bit frustrating that people don't think, and then here we are talking about how people overthink about trivial matters. So there's something going wrong, obviously, in the society, and that needs to be looked into. Why is this happening? Why do you think it's happening? Why do you think people overthink things?
Well, I guess because life has been so stressful for everyone, and maybe trivial things, which do not have too much of value, has got so much of importance in our lives. Maybe the worries of the future are too much and the regrets of the past are too much that we lose the track of right now and the present moment that we're living in. Yeah. And maybe, you know, there are too many factors for overthinking.
So I actually think the reason we overthink is I think we have too much choice. We have too much freedom. That's what I think, at least. We have too much choice, and so we spend too much time thinking about small and petty things. Whereas if the choice of things was reduced, if things were much simpler, if life was much simpler, yeah. I think we would think less about trivial matters and we would put time for more important things.
I agree, right? But it's still...
So there's so many small things you want to... Yeah. Like literally, like, you know, for a small thing you need to buy in the house, Okay, you're going to go through Amazon or eBay or whatever, yeah, wherever you're living.
You search and search.
And you search and search, and then you have all these cheap brands, and you're, yeah, like, which one should I get? How many reviews? And okay, this review is good, but there's one bad review, so I'm going to just get the thing.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
It's a small item for your house. Just buy it. It's not that expensive either.
Yeah, just go for it.
Yeah, there's so much, I feel, and that happens in so many different things in life, right? I feel we're just overstimulated with choices, with different things, mm-hmm, and that just makes us very sensitive to small things.
Yeah,
right?
We've turned into these picky kind of people.
Yeah, and like you said, it's not random. It's not like we like to do that. It's because of the bad experiences in the past of certain things and the fear of the future. Then we want to make sure that in all these things, oh, what if I buy this and it comes out, you know, mm-hmm, it's bad. It doesn't turn out to be as good as it says, or it comes faulty, or this or that. So it's sort of like our bad experiences in the past tying into the amount of choice that we have. And I just think it leads us to going, mm-hmm, crazy.
Well, dear folks, all the overthinkers from all around the world, stay tuned. We have more to talk about for overthinking.
This is IRIB English Radio. You are listening to Youth Station.
So perfectionism is also another reason of why people overthink different things. You know, when you get to be a sort of a picky person, when you try to make everything look perfect, when you try to do the best of your effort, then I guess you would turn into this overthinker that would be engaged with too much of thinking over everything. Because I want everything to be perfect, and I want to be a perfect human being. I want to be perfect in everything. So this is sad, and this would lead to overthinking.
Yeah. But this kind of perfection is not really human perfections, right? If you think about it, it's more about worldly matters, which actually don't matter to us as human beings.
Yeah,
I think it's a lot about us overthinking because of us giving importance to what people think about us.
You mean it's a sort of meaningless overthinking?
Yeah, they're not. We never overthink
about
how.
It's leading to nowhere.
Yeah, we never overthink about our generosity, about our kindness, about our ability to forgive. You know, things that really make us, yeah, real human beings, right? We overthink about the small issues that, mm-hmm, are mundane, that are worldly, physical things, right?
Yeah.
About our possessions and about these kind of things. And I feel that's because of this culture of comparing ourselves to others and being judged and judging people.
Yeah, this is very important.
Right?
Yeah.
And this is where we become very sensitive about how we do things, what we do, what we possess, how our house looks like, what we look like, you know,
mm-hmm,
our clothing, you know, small things like this, because we're constantly feeling that we're being watched and we're being judged.
Exactly.
So I think that also leads to that.
So comparing that myself to others, and then the fear of being judged.
Of being judged. Some, for example, you know, you want to buy something, you're scared that, you know, you buy it and it turns out to be bad and you look like a fool in,
yeah,
front of your friends or in front of your family.
Mm-hmm.
And so you start overthinking things.
Or even in front of yourself, you feel like, okay, I would regret it.
I would regret that, yeah. But if we think about it in the bigger scheme
scale
of things, in larger scale, that doesn't really matter.
Exactly.
It doesn't make me less of a human being.
If I do a mistake of buying,
yeah,
something,
or,
so
or buying
not
something,
so good.
Yeah, or of going in the wrong place or making this mistake or that mistake, it's not a big deal.
Yeah.
Right? But we don't think at the larger scale. We think very, very little, very
narrow-mindedly.
And usually, we rather than living our life and enjoying it, we think about how other people view us. And so
exactly,
we end up sacrificing, you know, our life and sacrificing our happiness for, mm-hmm, other people's, you know, happiness.
All of us in this modern life have been like this. I guess this modern life and its speed has turned us into these,
yeah, the modern
horrible
life is
creatures.
All about. Well, that's a bit harsh. It's a bit harsh on ourselves, I guess. But yeah, this is what the modern life is about. It's about comparing yourself to others. It's about how you look.
Mm-hmm.
It's all about how you look,
yeah,
and what you have, right? Because the modern world, like, there's no hiding it. It's,
you know,
not
prioritizing my needs and how to differentiate between the things that are trivial and the things that are important is a difficult task.
It's
to
a
do.
Difficult task, yeah.
And I guess if
it shouldn't
do
be
it,
difficult for us as Muslims, by the way. It shouldn't be difficult as Muslims, because I always say this, that we Muslims, we have a very clear path. We know exactly what we need to do and what we shouldn't do in most things in life.
Yeah.
Right? Because that was the whole point of Islam, right? Islam, Allah gave us instructions. Allah knew that we're going to be lost on our own, right? And that human beings on their own can't do this. So Allah sent us guidance. And for us as Muslims, we have our guidance. We more or less know what we should do and what we shouldn't do in most things in life. When it comes to others, I can understand why they're lost, because they don't have that guidance. So it makes sense to them. They're lost in life, so they're trying to find happiness and they're trying different things. Yeah. Well, we have the instructions. We just don't follow it. We're just not ready to accept that this is the right way towards our happiness.
Or let me just put it this way. As for me, for a believer, I'm a believer. I know the path. But sometimes I don't call it just getting out of the track or getting deviated. But sometimes, you know, it's hard to keep up with your beliefs. You know what I mean? I mean, I know that I should leave everything to God's decision and providence.
Yeah.
And I know that he would do whatever that is the best for me. But still, I am worrying about my future.
Yeah. But you see, in this case, it would be worrying about the important things, right? When you have this kind of focus, and by the way, when I say instructions of God, I mean when we understand them properly, right? This assuming that we're talking about the correct beliefs and the correct guidance and so on. Then what happens is then you worry about life, but about the important things in life, the things I really should be worried about. Yeah. Not the trivial things, right? And that actually makes you a better human being. That actually is the good type of thinking or overthinking.
Exactly.
Right? And I don't think it's a bad thing to overthink important things. Yeah.
Yeah.
I think important things need to be overthought. But obviously, there's also a way to go about it. We should seek counsel. We should, see how it...
mentors, someone who could help us.
Exactly. If we have mentors, if we have the right person to speak to, we think about things, we do our research, we take responsibility of our actions. And at the same time, we also rely on God. And this is the thing that really gives you that comfort. That, look, when I do my best, by the way, tawakkul and trusting Allah doesn't mean that you don't do anything, you just leave it to Allah. It means that you trust Allah. At the same time, you do what you're supposed to do. You carry out your responsibility. So you've thought things really properly and you've sought guidance for it. And then you do it with that tawakkul. Then if things don't work out well, you would have that peace of mind. You would have that tranquility in your heart. Look, I did my best. So there must be, like we say, khair, inshallah.
And I'm relying on you. So
exactly.
I do my best and I'm relying
on
you.
And if it doesn't work out, then you don't lose that inner peace because, you understand that there's definitely khair. There's definitely good in this.
This must have been the best choice for
me. Exactly, yeah. So I think that thing that Islam gives us is really that key towards that peace of mind.
Yeah.
Right? That you take your actions, you think about things and so on. And then when things don't turn out the way you wanted, it still doesn't bother you.
Yeah, so
you're
let's
able to
go
cope with it.
For much of thinking and then come back after the break. You're listening to Youth Station. I'm Asma. Me and Brother Abu Zahra were talking about overthinking. And then we talked about the reasons and the causes of overthinking. Let's talk more on how to overcome it. Well, one of them was to have reliance on Allah and then do my effort. And then whatever happens, believe it and make sure that this was the best for you.
And the other thing was about having a mentor and seeking guidance. Asking people for their experiences. And, using your knowledge, your thinking, and other people's experiences to be able to get
away
with things.
So as for myself, when I get into the process of overthinking, I try to engage myself with some sort of tasks that are going to be useful for me. Like, I am translating a book. So whenever I have troubles and problems and traumas, I just go to it and do my translation.
Mm. And so one of the ways is, distract yourself. Make yourself busy. And then when you're at a better mental state and emotionally more stable, then you come back and think about it properly and rationally.
Yeah.
Right? And I feel writing things down also really helps.
Makes
your thinking much clearer. Yeah.
Imagine you're on a break, then you can go for a short journey or travel. You can go for a walk if the journey and traveling is not available for you. Then you can go for a short walk. You can change your situation, go for anything different. And engage yourself in new stuff that could just change your way of thinking. When there are some times that have been after that problem or issue that has happened to you, then you could see that, there were some other solutions for me. Why I didn't notice them? That the problem could have been solved pretty much easily. Why I was so much blind not to see all those
and
ways.
And often in the middle of the problem, you make the problem too big, right?
Exactly.
It seems like the only thing in the world that matters.
Yeah. It seems like you're the only one in this world who's suffering from this huge problem, but that's not the truth about the case. So we were talking about overthinking. Overthinking is bad. when it is about trivial things, when it is about mundane things, when it is about some stuff that are not just worthy of spending too much of time on them, but ever thinking about important thing as in to improve yourself, as in to be a better soul, as in to achieve a more of, evolvement in your character or personality. These things are, to overthink about these things is sort of justified, but about the trivial things of this yes. mundane life is not justifiable any way you look at it.
And overthinking about, difficulties that you come across and stuff, again, that makes sometimes the problem worse.
Exactly.
And I think one thing that really helps as well is to ask yourself, if I keep thinking about it and if I dwell on it, is it going to make a difference?
Yeah.
Right. And you remind yourself that, look, however much I think about it, at the end of the day, right now, it's not in my control. Just forget about it.
Yeah.
Take a step back, forget about it. We'll come back to it later. Right.
Exactly.
Because my continuing to think about it is not going to make a difference. It's not going to solve it. In fact, it's going to make it worse because I'm making it a big deal in my mind. It's difficult, but when you think about it like this, then you're able to sort of step back, take a step back, and like you said, travel, do something,
exactly.
keep yourself busy, and that really helps to empty your mind.
Sometimes it's good to embrace the problem right at the moment, but sometimes it's good to procrastinate things. I mean, delay it, just put it off, put it for another time, give yourself a break, and then after 2 days, 3 days, whatever time you wish to take, come back to it, and you could see that it's pretty much easier, and at least it's not as difficult as you thought
it
would be.
It makes more sense.
Yeah, it makes more sense. Okay, thank you, brother, and thank you, dear listeners.
Thank
you for staying with us. Until another session, I bid you farewell. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah.
New figures show that the number of people declared homeless due to eviction in Scotland has nearly doubled, as more Scots face uncertainty in the housing market. We take a look at some of the world press and media's coverage of this story. Please stay with us. The British news of The Observer has covered this story and tells us more. New figures show people living in the most deprived areas of Britain have seen their rents increase by 52% over the past 4 years. While for tenants in the wealthiest regions of the country, rents have risen by only 29%. Dan Wilson-Craw, Deputy Chief Executive of Generation Rent, said, "It is shocking to see that home rents have been rising in areas where people are least able to afford it." The countrywide data analysed by the state agent Hamptons and shared with The Observer reveals that how in 2019 renters in the most deprived regions of the country were paying an average of £499 a calendar month. By 2023, that had shot up to more than £759. In contrast, those renting a property in Britain's most affluent districts were paying an average monthly rent of £1,078 in 2019, and that's gone up to £1,387 this year. Pauline Neat, Chief Executive of Shelter, told The Observer, "The private rental sector is creaking under the weight of demand as rents spiral out of reach of local incomes and tenants are pitted against each other for a limited supply of homes." According to the state agents, Hamptons, landlords in less affluent areas rely more heavily on mortgage finance than their wealthiest peers, helping to drive up costs. Interest rates have gone up from 1.75% in August of 2022 to 5.25% today, with some passing on rising costs to renters. Tenants in deprived districts of the country have seen their monthly rents increase by a typical £97 since 2022. Wilson Cross said, over the past couple of years, more people have wanted to live in cities where areas of high deprivation are concentrated. Craw added, financial pressures have pushed many renters into relatively cheaper areas of cities to find an affordable home, and the effect has been to push up rents for those people already living there. The figures reflect how Britain's continued housing crisis is combining with the cost of living crisis, as rent, mortgage rates and rising food prices and energy costs are squeezing incomes. The Scottish newspaper The Scotsman Daily has also covered the same story and tells us more. Renters are already more likely to be living in poverty. According to the 2022 annual poverty report from the Joseph Rantree Foundation, a third of private tenants, or 4.2 million people, are in poverty, driven by a combination of high housing costs and low incomes. Almost a half, or 46% of private renters living in poverty, say they have been pulled into poverty by their housing costs. Of the most deprived regions in the United Kingdom, the district with the highest percentage of rise in rental costs was Lindhouse in Glasgow, where monthly rents increased from £597 in 2019 to £985 this year, a rise of 65%. Just under a third, or 30%, of children in Glasgow City live in poverty. For tenants in affluent Ascot in Berkshire, rents are higher than in Lindhouse in Glasgow, but the percentage increase is far lower. Monthly rents rose from £3,224 in 2019 to £4,163 in this year, 2023, an increase of 29%. Child poverty rates in the wider Windsor and Maidenhead region are 19%, and more than two-thirds of Ascot residents own their own homes. The Joseph Rantree Foundation data found that 20% of low-income households taking on new debt to pay for rent and energy. Esther Planners, a 62-year-old, has called Hackney an East London home since the late 1990s, when she moved to the United Kingdom from Spain. An artist, she has lived and worked in the borough of Hackney ever since, admitting that in some ways she was part of the gentrification. Esther Planners is now faced with having to leave her home due to increasingly high housing costs. Her landlord recently informed her that her monthly rent will go up from £1,175 to £1,620, an increase that she cannot afford. She told the Scotsman, "It's a huge amount of money," adding, "I live in a vulnerable and precarious context as an artist. My income is from selling my work, teaching, lecturing and grants. I considered becoming officially homeless and getting help from the local council, but the waiting list is years long." This is not the first time rising rents have forced planners from her home. Her previous landlord evicted all the residents from the block of studio flats where she used to live. Now the street is full of VIP apartments.
This is A to Z. An introduction into an Islamic lifestyle. Today's lesson, good manner. Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. In today's lesson, we will talk about the limitations or limits and boundaries of good manner. When we talk about the limits of good manner, we said that the first limit was to deal with the mu'mineen as your brothers and have mercy upon it. The second limit and the boundary of the good manners is to how to deal with the non-believers and those who are the polytheists maybe or maybe the kuffar. When we see the Islamic text, we see that in the Quran, when Allah talks to the Musa alayhi salam, the Prophet Musa, he says, اذهب إلى فرعون إنه طغى. O Moses, or the Prophet Moses, you and your brother Harun must go towards Fir'aun or Pharaoh. Why? Because he has become a rebel. فقولا له قولا لينا, and talk to him in a soft manner. لَعَلَّهُ يَتَذَكَّرُ أَوْ يَخْشَى. Maybe he learns from it, or maybe he gets fear of what you're talking about, or he has the fear of you. So when we look at the Islamic text, we see that Islam teaches us that when you need to talk to the non-believer, when you're talking to someone who is maybe a polytheist or non-believer, then you need to use a soft language, you need to talk in a soft way, and you need to softly speak to them so that you can call them towards the right path. When you're talking to them, you talk them in a soft way so that they can get closer to you, they can learn from it, they can learn the message that Islam talks about softness. Islam, when it deals with the kuffar, it has a soft corner so that they can come towards us. Therefore, when we are dealing with the non-Muslims, we must observe these messages which are given in the Quran, inshallah. Welcome back. You're listening to A to Z from IRB English Radio. We were talking about the topic of limits of good manner in Islam. When we talk about the limits of good manner, we said that we must have a good manner and we must talk lightly and softly with the kuffar, with the non-believers. And we should not have a way of talking to them that they feel guilty when we are talking to them. We should call them towards Islam in a soft way. And this is what Islam talks about. We have many examples in the history that, for example, once the Prophet ﷺ, he was sitting with his companions and a Jew came to the Prophet. And he said that the Prophet of Islam or the Prophet of Islam owes me something, and he must face the punishment because he did not pay his debt on time. And this is what he said. Prophet ﷺ said that I never had anything, I never took anything from you, so I do not owe anything, and I'm not guilty at any cost. But if you say, let's sit here, and if you have some witnesses, bring your witnesses, and we wait until your witnesses comes. And the history says that they sat there for half a day when the sun came to the middle of the sky and it was too hot. This guy stood up and he said that I witnessed that you are the true messenger of Allah because you never became angry of what I have said and you were after the logical and the intellectual way of solving the issue that I presented to you. And I witnessed that you are the true messenger of God for which the Old Testament or the books, our holy books, have witnessed. And therefore, he became Muslim. Therefore, there are many other examples in the history that we can follow and we can deal with the non-Muslims with a good manner so that they become Muslim, inshallah. Thanks for listening. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
IRIB English Radio. Our website is parsetoday.ir.
You can email us at englishradio@irib.ir.
IRIB English Radio, a window to peace of mind and spirituality. You can tune in to IRIB English Radio 24 hours a day. We are with you. Are you with us? Are you with us? Are you with us? This is our voice from the heart of the Islamic Republic of Iran, IRIB English Radio.
In the limelight.
British Petroleum has reported $2.6 billion in profits after hottest month on record. Climate advocates note that oil and gas profits are soaring like the temperature increases they are responsible for. This is while Britons are struggling with the cost of living crisis. According to new reports, England is facing a homelessness crisis, with the number of people living in temporary accommodation in England at a 25-year high. In this regard, we have taken a look at world media websites and news agencies for further details. Stay tuned for more. Truthout noted, the London-based oil giant BP reported second-quarter profits of $2.6 billion and announced a 10% dividend raise for shareholders on the heels of what was likely the hottest month on record, a grim milestone that scientists say was made possible by the burning of fossil fuels. While BP's profits for the second quarter of 2023 were far lower than the massive $8.5 billion it logged during the same period last year, a drop caused by falling global oil prices, the company has still raked in $7.6 billion in profits so far this year. The company has set out those profits to investors in the form of share buybacks and dividends. BP said in its earnings announcement that it will repurchase another $1.5 billion worth of its shares over the next 3 months. Jonathan Norona Gant, a senior campaigner at Global Witness, said in a statement recently, in 2021, BP's CEO described his company as a cash machine after soaring oil and gas prices boosted profits. Nearly 2 years on, and BP is riding the wave of the energy crisis and handing huge sums of money to its shareholders while the UK's poverty rates spiral. This is what a broken energy system looks like. Oil giants get richer because the rest of us get poorer. Gant added, for BP, the energy crisis has been a giant cash grab. For parents across the country, it has been an impossible choice between feeding their children and paying their bills. BP's earnings report comes as its rival Shell posted $5.1 billion in second quarter profits last week and announced a dividend boost of 15% amid a deadly global heat wave. Nicolo Wojewoda, Europe Regional Director at 350.org, said recently that you would think that those most responsible for the hottest month in recorded human history are being held accountable. thing again. Fossil fuel companies, instead of facing consequences, continue being rewarded with record-breaking annual profits, having cashed in more than $200 billion in 2022 alone. He added, fossil fuel industry profits are soaring alongside the rise in global temperatures they are responsible for. This must end now. We must hold them accountable for the damage they have inflicted, making them pay for it and phasing their dangerous influence out of existence. Recently, a group of U.S. lawmakers led by Senator Bernie Sanders urged the Biden Justice Department to sue fossil fuels companies for leading a decades-long, carefully coordinated campaign of misinformation to obfuscate climate science and convince the public that fossil fuels are not the primary driver of climate change. BP knew about the link between fossil fuels and climate change for years before it began publicly acknowledging the connection and styling itself as a renewable energy leader, a posture it has since abandoned. Like Shell and other oil giants, BP recently walked back some of its stated emission reduction targets and announced plans to produce more fossil fuels than previously expected. Earlier this year, BP said it intends to cut fossil fuel production by 25% below 2019 levels by decade's end instead of its previous goal of 40%. Dorothy Guerrero, head of policy and advocacy at the UK-based group Global Justice Now, said in response to the recent earnings results that once again BP has raked in highest profits as our planet burns, from people struggling with the cost of living crisis in the UK to communities on the front line of climate disasters in the global south. We're all footing the bill for the reckless profiteering of the fossil fuel industry. Adding, enough is enough. The government must stop turning a blind eye as shareholders line their pockets at our collective expense. It's time to bring in a permanent polluters tax to hold BP and other fossil fuel companies to account for the damage they continue to wreak. Leaving this industry with the power to profit without consequence is not only morally abhorrent, it's plainly ludicrous in the face of a climate catastrophe that threatens us all. Meanwhile, Press TV reported England is facing a homelessness crisis, with the number of people living in temporary accommodation in England at a 25-year high. Over 104,000 households were in temporary accommodation by the end of March 2023, the highest number since records began in 1998. This is indicative of a 10% jump of homeless people in England compared to last year. Official data shows that 9,520 more households have been placed in temporary accommodation since 2022. Over 131,000 children are also in temporary accommodation, the highest figure on record. Almost 14,000 households were in hotels or bed and breakfast accommodation in the 3 months ending in March. Official figures also show a sharp rise in homelessness in older people in the year ending on the 31st of March and a 33.3% increase in the number of homeless households with a priority need due to old age. We'll be right back.
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم السلام عليكم ورحمة الله
Selection of Ayatollah Khamenei's viewpoints
همه با وجود قده سرطانی اسرائیل مخالفیم
All of us are opposed to the cancerous tumor Israel
وجه مشترک همه وحدت امت اسلامی
Unity of Islamic Ummah is the aspect that all of Islamic denominations have in common.
Reasons behind enemies targeting Islam is the political rules of Islam. This is the part of a speech delivered by the leader of Islamic Revolution in a meeting with the Supreme Assembly of Commanders and officials of the Islamic Revolutionary Guard Corps on August 17, 2023. In the Imam Khomeini's Hosseiniyeh. One of the important things that we must continuously focus on is guarding ourselves. We all have weaknesses. Every human being has flaws within their own selves. Some of these weaknesses lie hidden in the internal layers of a person's mind and spirit. If these find a situation where they can emerge, they will emerge. Some of us have a passion for money and some of us love gaining a higher rank. There are all kinds of lusts and desires that attract us. Sometimes we are neglectful about these. That is, we are neglectful about these traits most of the time. If one finds an opportunity to emerge, it will emerge and overcome us. If we do not fight it, it will overcome us and knock us down. We must guard ourselves. The values and prominence of the IRGC is very valuable. These must be protected and guarded. Officials of various ranks in the IRGC should be active, sensitive, careful, and concerned in these fields.
دنیای اسلام یک
The world of Islam has one single prescription today, and that is unity. This prescription exists in all Islamic countries. Nations should be united.
If remembering God is neglected, this threat will become even greater. If there is less selfless jihadi motivation for any reason, these threats will become greater. If we become arrogant because of our accomplishments, we will face a greater threat. These are the risk factors: forgetting God, becoming arrogant because of the achievement, getting tired of jihadi work, not paying attention to God's blessings, not remembering the great blessings that God has given us, and losing hope as soon we face a difficulty. When we face a problem, we tend to forget that Almighty God has solved hundreds of our problems, and that is another one of these problems. What significance does it have? We have been taught in prayers, O Allah, your light is complete, so you guide it. Praise be to you, you our Lord. Your hand is extended, so you gave and blessed. Praise be to you, our Lord. Your patience is immense, so you forgave. Praise be to you, our Lord.
Allah, I want to thank you. I want to thank you for all the things that you've done for me through all my years. I've been lost. You guided me from all.
Of Jalali Tehran. Rubashavit Gaza.
Jerome Hughes, Brussels.
Said Poreza, London.
Rasha Saglam, Istanbul.
Said Amin Olemi, Kabul.
Shahana Bhatt, Indian administered Kashmir.
Round the world with reporters.
With the efforts of Iranian experts, Iran managed to move and install a 3,200 platform in the South Pars gas field in July. The platform, which was the heaviest of its kind in the entire gas field, was installed in a complex and unique operation in the Persian Gulf. The operation had a 20-year delay due to Western sanctions.
Although we signed contracts with several foreign companies for 20 years, these contracts were not fulfilled due to Iran's international conditions and the indifference of foreign companies. As a result, Iran relied on its domestic capabilities to develop this oil platform.
In 2008, Total and Petronas announced that high development costs in the wake of rising steel prices had forced them to delay a final decision on investment after Iran had repeatedly extended a deadline. Tehran finally dismissed them from the project, which was overshadowed by haggling over contract terms. Despite all these obstacles, Iran now has managed to produce gas through the platform after its installation.
Although one-third of the field is in our possession and the other two-thirds are located in the geography of Qatar, we are ahead in terms of production. Today we are producing between 600 and 700 million cubic meters of gas, which is equivalent to 4 million barrels of oil.
The economic benefits of completing Phase 11 of the South Pars gas field are numerous. It is estimated to create up to 10,000 jobs and bring $20 billion of income to Iran. In addition, it will help revive Iran's oil and gas sector, which has been struggling over the years due to sanctions and low investment. Drilling of new wells at Phase 11 is an important step in Iran's drive to achieve energy independence and geopolitical stability, which will dramatically increase the gas production capacity at South Pars. It will meet Iran's domestic consumption needs and help the country emerge as an important regional exporter.
This great achievement by Iran shows that countries under sanction, including Iran, can neutralize unilateral Western sanctions by relying on their domestic capabilities. Farzana Ashuryan, Asaluye.
On Friday, a 24-hour national strike was called by a number of base unions representing airline personnel, airport workers, and ground handlers in Italy. As a result of the industrial action, over 100 domestic and international flights were cancelled, with great delays recorded in a number of airports, including those of Milan, Venice, and Verona. It was the 18th strike involving airport and airline personnel in Italy this year. Travelers are feeling that they are left bearing the brunt of the clash between aviation sector companies and their workers.
They are not able to find a mutually satisfying deal. It must be said that workers have been deprived of their social rights over the past years.
I'm from Madrid. I just got here. I don't know if I'll be able to reach my destination today. It's very annoying.
Aviation sector workers have gone berserk as airline fares have skyrocketed over the past year and their salary levels have remained the same, if not worsened.
Union's main demand concerns airport ground service workers' collective agreement covering wages. The latest contract expired 6.5 years ago. In the meantime, inflation has really eaten into wages.
In our airports, we've got insecure, low-paid jobs which push workers into poverty. Some employees are forced to accept part-time jobs for less than 800 euros a month. Some others have to pay for parking their car in the workplace car parking areas, let alone their undignifying working conditions. The logic behind this is the same as usual. Services offered at the cheapest rate. We have left the market in the hands of companies, and this is the result.
Goods and services prices in Italy have gone up dramatically since the start of the war in Ukraine. The 2022 annual inflation rate stood at over 8 percentage points, the highest level since 1985. Inflation stands at 6% today. A combination of high cost of living, skyrocketing costs of borrowing money, and insufficient fiscal support has caused a crunch that is felt at nearly every level in the country. Max Cibili, Rome.
Iranians have marked the Shahrivar 17th uprising by holding a ceremony at Behesht Zahra Cemetery in Tehran. The event was attended by survivors, eyewitnesses, and the families of those killed in the tragic event on September 8, 1978. Later, they paid respect to the martyrs of the uprising by laying wreaths on their graves. On that day, people took to the streets in order to protest against the Pahlavi dictatorship, most of them unaware that just a few hours before the regime had imposed martial law to prevent anti-regime protests. As a result, hundreds of peaceful protesters were gunned down by Shah's military forces in and around Jalle Square and other parts of southern Tehran.
When Shah's agents started shooting, the crowd fell on the ground like chopped firewood. One was saying Allahu Akbar, the other one was shouting. And from time to time, the soldiers came forward and opened fire on the people. It was a very shocking scene. There was a bloodbath in the street.
Our house was near Jalle Square. When the shooting started, we couldn't go home. The soldiers even came to the surrounding streets. We went inside the half-finished building. The roof was full of Shah's agents and gunmen. We saw that they killed a lot of people down there.
The historical sources say that as many as 4,000 people were shot by guns and military helicopters. Black Friday is believed to have led to the overthrow of Iran's monarchy a few months later. The events triggered protests for another 4 months.
I witnessed that a young man entered the street after buying some bread, but he was shot by the soldiers and fell into a hole dug for phone installation. I and a few other people tried to go to save him, but bullets were fired at us. The poor young man was struggling. One of the local tradesmen finally reached him. Then an ambulance came and took away his dead body.
Black Friday is considered as a symbol of resistance against tyranny and oppression of the time. The event is still remembered as a glory for a nation who gained freedom and independence after years of struggle against monarchy.
According to historians, the Black Friday is seen as a turning point in the fight against the US-backed Pahlavi regime. It united opposition to the Shah and mobilized the masses, which led to the regime's overthrow in less than 6 months. Salman Kujuri, Tehran.
Millions of pilgrims on their way back home after attending Arba'in mourning ceremonies in the Iraqi city of Karbala. The Iraqi government has taken various measures to facilitate their return. And neighboring Iran is also lending a hand, offering special services, not just to Iranian citizens, but to pilgrims from other countries as well. Many of the Iranian mukebs, or tents that were set up to serve the pilgrims across the Arab country, are still there. And Iran's Karbala Consulate's special Arba'in section, tasked with helping the pilgrims, will remain operational for another week.
Here at the operation room, we not only give information to the pilgrims, but we also provide them with assistance in case they encounter any problems. There are several committees that follow up on issues that the pilgrims face and contact